Hey folks, for today's show, we're listening to the first half of a recording of a live show that I did back in July 2025. My original plan for this live show recording was kind of more focused around additional content and maybe getting some feedback, and I was calling it episode 10 out of 9 because it sort of fitted as an extra bit on the end of the 9 episodes of Pan Political. But at some stage, I realized it would be both more fun and also more valuable to listen to listeners and to have discussion and dialogue and sort of review and debrief the 9 episodes that had been. And I had a great time doing this, so much so I want to do it again. Next one will be coming up on Wednesday, August the 13th, 2025. That'll be in the evening, Melbourne time. If you'd like to be there, it's pretty cheap, around $20. And there's a link to that event in the show notes. And that link has already gone out to supporters on Patreon, you legends, who get an additional 50% discount. So yeah, I'd love to see you at the show. And in the meanwhile, let's have a listen to the first half of the recording I made from the live show in July 2025. So welcome to the live recording of Pan Political episode 10. I kind of want to sort of say like thank you for listening. I kind of want to sort of say like thank you for being here this morning. But I think like mostly what I want to say is I'm just excited to be here. I'm excited to have people to chat about these topics with, and I'm so excited that you're interested. When I imagined this, I imagined it'll be more a question of me putting forward additional comment and bouncing off that, but I realized that this resource of your opinions and your ideas is probably the most exciting thing for me about this. So I've sort of tilted my approach a little bit more towards that. And specifically, the plan for the day, in just a wee little second, I'm just going to see what opening thoughts you've got, having listened to some or all of Pan Political. Then I'm going to go back and go through each episode in turn, because for some of us, it's been a long time. So I'll just recount the important points from that episode and also tack on what I think the implications are, or like what that episode might mean for us going forward, like what would need to change. And then I'm going to invite your input at each episode. So it'll be a sort of a refreshing walk down memory lane. So how was it? How'd you go listening to Pan Political? What was it like for you? What came up?
Okay. Yeah, a thing that I noticed a lot when talking with people out in the world who've had a lot of training on using gender-inclusive language and being kind to people around them, they say a lot of things that are quite sexist against men. And I found the more I listened to the podcast, the more I'd notice it and have that kind of discomfort until I had to have some kind and gentle conversations with people. So it was an uncomfortable listen to bring it to my conscious awareness.
Yeah, right. There's a little bit of a blind spot oftentimes amongst those of us that are otherwise very well gender informed. It's almost like we don't include male as a gender, or we just don't have an interest in that particular part of it. I often find that the case. I've found it infuriating over the last 30 years. When me and my community and the people around us, we arc up about misogynistic jokes, but we make misandristic jokes. I don't think that's the right word, but it doesn't matter, pretty consistently. So yeah, cool. Sorry that was uncomfortable, but yay that was uncomfortable. And also yay, thank you very much for gently intervening in that process. I hope that's been sustainable and okay.
Yeah, I think discomfort is a good thing if it can lead to change.
Agreed. Who else? How'd you go listening to Pan Political?
I could share. I've been sharing with a few close friends and loved ones
that it feels like the cognitive emotional change that's happening in me right now is akin to when I started doing anti-racism work a few years ago, which is to say I feel really out of my comfort zone, really out of my league, and just everywhere I look, it seems like there's another reason for my heart to be breaking that I didn't see before. And so I feel like it's stretching my compassion and my ability to listen. And I'm not yet to the point that Layla was talking about where I'm able to speak up in the moment when I'm hearing those things happen. It's been something I've been steeped in for so long to hear Tommen against men or I won't repeat them, but it's been something that's been so part of the fabric of my reality. But I am finding opportunities to speak to men that have made themselves available for me to talk to about that and just start wrestling with these issues that I didn't see before. And that's been incredibly rewarding.
Wow. Amazing. Thank you. Wow. Yeah, I very much relate on becoming aware of race issues, like as a white presenting and white identified person, when you start to realize just how much it's everywhere. I relate to the discomfort you speak of. Thank you for speaking to it. Would anyone else like to say any just general comments before we get started on what it's been like for you listening to Panpolitical? Yeah, Robbie.
Yeah, I'll try to make a coherent sentence. I found it enlightening and dangerous at the same time.
Ooh.
Really felt like it's hit something that I've been searching for. Growing up as the stereotypical middle wage, I hate saying that, white man with an opinion, I feel like my voice was lost and I wasn't able to bring up my opinion, the environment where it will become valued. And listening to this is sort of starting to plug some gaps and go, this is what it sort of explains a lot of what's been going on. And it really helps me now when I'm talking with people to kind of educate a little bit on, okay, you're not alone in feeling this. There is something behind, but it still feels very dangerous to talk about it openly. So,
yeah. Thank you. You might not want to say, feel free not to, but do you want to say a little more about like what aspect of that is dangerous? Like, why is it dangerous?
A little bit topical here. Even events that have happened in the last week in Victoria.
Yeah.
Makes it feel very dangerous to try and stand up to bring out the stereotype that it's not all men when it's not. But the few that do these horrible things make it really difficult for people to have a conversation about, okay, it's not just equality, it's equity. We need to bring things back to a center line. And it makes it really difficult to have these conversations because it's just blasted out there and it feels dangerous to talk to me personally.
Wonderful. Thank you. For those that are not familiar, I think what you're talking about there, Robbie, is in Victoria this week, we've had one or it looks like two cases of men in young childcare situations that have been found to have been sexually abusing the children in their care. That has caused a understandable outrage. And one aspect of that I've noticed, I don't know if this is the same for you, Robbie, but one aspect of that is that there are calls to ban all men from all childcare circumstances under all circumstances. And I know, like speaking for myself on that, I've read a couple of those articles, and aside from partly wanting to cry, I also am incapable of interfacing with that conversation at the moment because the gap between, oh God, just where do you start? Just so much sadness and pain for everyone involved in every aspect of this story.
Yeah, it's just, as you said, it's so important for men to take these roles so we have role models when we're growing up, because they were there for me. There was no male strong positive role model. I want to stress the positive. There was heaps of negative. But growing up through that time, there was no strong male positive role models. And we need to change that. And events like these make it really difficult.
Yes.
People would put their head up and go, okay, I'll go into the fire and I'll fight for this. But
yes. In the short term, it seems like a logical jump to make, to say, right, let's get men out of all of these positions full stop. But you are absolutely right. children take a lot of guidance from their same-sexed role models, and we live in a world where men are mostly at work and disappearing from these roles, so there are an absence of direct male role models around. So a lot of boys are taking their guidance from what they see in films and television. And because we are at a time of talking about, let's say, the badness of men, a lot, the majority, most of those role models are really quite bad. So even if a boy or a man is doing his best to choose the best of those role models, he's still choosing a really bad role model. And so when we ban men from all of these spaces, as a perhaps understandable short-term reaction, we are creating the next generation of mess. I'm running a course called A Therapist's Guide to Sexuality, Taboos and Kink with Process Work International. It's designed with therapists in mind, by which I mean any one-to-one practitioner who wants to know more about the world of sexuality so as to be able to better support your clients that are exploring that world. It'll tackle a whole bunch of juicy topics like how to pick positively and therapeutically beneficial forms of play from ones that might be damaging or concerning. It addresses why people pursue these areas of interest in the first place, and what you can do to support them towards safe and well-paced experimentation, even if you yourself have got little or no interest in such things. The course is pitched at therapists of various descriptions, but will also be of relevance to people seeking a solid grounding in best practice exploration of their sexuality. It runs for 3 2-hour sessions by Zoom, starting on September the 9th, 2025. Links are in the show notes, and also on the Curious Creatures website. Love to see you there. How about that capitalism, huh? I want to talk with you about a weird way that capitalism is actually kind of functional. It's to do with this podcast. Firstly, I want to stress it's okay for you to just listen to this and not contribute. I say just listen because it's not nothing. By just listening to it, you're engaging with my material, you're probably having chats about it with others, and really, that's all I'm doing this for. I can tell that you are there because I can see you in the total number of downloads, and it means a lot to me. This relationship works for me. It's okay to just listen. At the same time, I know that some of you want to show a more active level of support and are in a position to do so. This is where capitalism comes into it and doesn't actually do a half bad job. I've set up a Patreon page, which, in short, is an easy way for you to contribute. And it's very meaningful to me. I used to be skeptical about paying for podcasts, but eventually I had to ask myself how it differs from paying for books, or for videos, or for workshops, or for therapy, all of which I pay for pretty consistently. And this, my friends, is my version of a book, or a workshop, or a whatever. So I feel okay about asking for a donation through Patreon, if you're in a position to do so, and this has been meaningful for you. So the link is in the show notes and also on the Curious Creatures website. If you're not in a position to contribute, please don't feel guilty about listening to this for free. I appreciate you, and I appreciate having you on this ride with me. Hey folks, I'm doing another live recording. It's very much like what you're listening to right now, so bits of content and lots of questions and answers and discussion. Obviously, you get to meet me, and also opportunities to meet other listeners and have really cool chats with them. I think it's particularly useful if you're enjoying this material and you feel a little isolated in terms of people you can connect with and chat with about it. It's going to be online, and you can participate in the event without being a part of the final recording. It is so easy for me to cut you out of the edit, and there's many opportunities for you to indicate that you don't want to be recorded. It's going to be on Wednesday, August the 13th, 2025, in the evening Melbourne time. Cheap, at around about $20, and the link is in the show notes. And also on the Curious Creatures website, which is curiouscreatures.biz, B-I-Z. Emma, did you have something you wanted to say?
That's great, thank you. Yeah, just that I was at school
yesterday and the day before. Wait, I think it was yesterday. And some year 12 girls were completely freaking out about the childcare situation and sitting there next to me going, oh, they should ban all men. I'm like, oh, and I almost didn't say anything, but I did. I said, banning all men isn't the solution. And they go, oh, but and they sort of getting all freaked out. And they go, but it's disgusting. I said, yeah, it is. And creating safe systems is going to be well better than banning a particular group of people out of the system, because then you have all the lack of role model and all the other things. And they sort of went, oh, and by the end of the conversation, they were on board with me. So I was like, yes. But it was obviously only a very tiny part of that conversation. But it was really hard because they were so vehement and so distressed and jumping to the instant solution, ban all men. So it was, yeah, shocking, but felt brave for saying something.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Yes. Understandable. Yes. All right. Maybe we'll take one more comment on this and then move on.
I just wanted to speak back to that, the situations that's been happening. I actually found an article that first crossed my table and reading it had both sides of the story. And I was quite surprised that there was a balance. However, in saying that, it was all a lot of ban the men, and then like three quarters into the article, you get the more nuanced pictures. So I can see a lot of people consuming media the way we do now will lose interest before they get to the end of that. But I have seen some articles pop up yesterday that have a bit of the, like, the systems need to change, not removing a group of the people. As Emma said, my reflections in the pan-political listening journey have been really interesting. I've really valued it. I found a lot of the conversations really affirming in that you had the conversation about things that I've thought about, and I was like, yes, okay, I'm not like on my like little island with this idea. Like, it's got some feet. And that was really affirming, especially because I often find myself in spaces that I don't have the same opinion of the majority of people in the room who have the power, especially in my workspace. So having, like, hearing my ideas reflected back was really great. I also really found really useful and interesting to hear about that sexism in the research space. Coming from a science background, I think I held the research space in this kind of like great, neutral, like facts out guard, and to realize that, oh no, they're not. There's still capitalism and money, and like people will corrupt that system. That was really eye-opening. And since then, I've been like really a lot more, way more critical than I already was in terms of when I bring up data and bring up points, and have found myself having conversations with people being like, but yeah, but have we looked at all sides of the picture? So yeah, really appreciate the series.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. To your first point about feeling like a little alone and isolated, I think you said like an island around some of the thoughts around this. Yeah, I've always felt the same. I've always felt this weird disconnect in that when I actually sit down and have time to chat with people about these topics, I find that most people are able to have like a really interesting, really nuanced, really juicy conversation. And on some level, actually know most of these data points already, or like it doesn't take much nudging. But finding conversations and resources about this stuff out in the broader public sphere, or having them spoken about in public ways, is almost unheard of. So this series, by the way, for me was a bit of an experiment in, I wonder what would happen if ... So yeah, great. Okay. Thanks, gang. My inclination is to start rolling into our series by series recap. Loving your input and thoughts, by the way. Thank you. So, in the first episode, I introduced myself. I tried to address the biases that we have between whether some of these thoughts come from someone with a male voice or a female voice. And I've gotten unilateral feedback that everybody hated the computer voices I used. So sorry about that. And for those of you listening at home, more than half of the Zoom call here is nodding. They say that. And I used the example of male violence and more specifically how to stop male violence as an example of the difference between looking at the problem and looking at the causes of the problem. You get very different outcomes there. And I articulated the incredible financial cost and I would argue stupidity of what we're doing at the moment in response to, say, that particular problem. And if I jump to what my thoughts are on potential outcomes or potential things that we could change from that perspective, I would say we need to stop restricting. It's not quite as simple as saying what genders can participate in the conversation around gender politics. It's more for me, I think of it more in terms of like what roles can participate in the conversation. In some ways it is like what genders can participate. I feel like for the most part, women are allowed to participate in the gender conversation at the moment, especially if they're talking about pro-women's issues. Men are allowed to contribute if they're talking about pro-women's issues, and even then their contribution is conditional. Like their acceptance in that club is conditional, so long as they keep talking about women's issues. I think the moment it happens to women, but I think especially it happens to men when you start talking, expressing that you have a care or an interest in men's issues, that's the point where you get excluded from the conversation. So one of the big things that I think needs to change is to remove that restriction. And then on the question of dealing with male violence or violence generally, I'm definitely not proposing that we abandon our efforts around policing problematic behaviours. And I think there's still definitely a case to be made for the isolation or for the separation of people that are a risk to the people around them. There's a whole other question of like whether that needs to include punishment. There's almost no data to suggest that punishment serves anyone. Even people who have been harmed by a person, momentarily, it can feel good that the other person is being punished. But if you ask them, would you prefer that this person was legitimately and genuinely rehabilitated versus would you just like to see them dying and in tears? Or however you phrase that question, that was very loaded language, but you get what I mean. Everyone says, of course, I would much prefer to see them rehabilitated so that they know what they did and so that they don't do it again, as opposed to trained to do more of it again. So one's a no-brainer. So I'm not proposing that we take away policing. I'm not proposing we take away separation as required or isolation, but that we start investing way more in what we are doing to create those risky people and those challenging behaviours. So it's a bit of a fundamental shift from like the current position is something along the lines of, oh, well, boys will be boys and men are essentially bad at their core and these things are going to happen. So all we can do is just like lock them away as we find them. So it's a huge shift to go from that to something which sort of says, well, we as a culture are doing something to create this behaviour and we need to stop that. So yeah, that's my thoughts. What about you? Any thoughts on that episode one stuff?
Just going back to your comment about males having, in certain conversations, like temporary access to the conversation. I've found it even goes as far as when you try to build understanding by showing a parallel experience, I've often been shut down with, no, you can't possibly have felt threatened. Or whatever. And I'm just trying to say, oh, so like when someone's walking behind you at the train station and you're feeling like, is that what we're talking about? Is it that kind of sensation? And yeah, I've been like cut off of the knees and kicked out of the feminist conversation at that point because I tried to make it about myself. And I'm like, no, I was just trying to understand because I'm not you. But yeah, so yeah, I found like that first episode covered a bunch of things along those lines that rang true for me.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting time at the moment in terms of like violence on the street. So like your example of walking along and being at a railway station or whatever, men are approximately twice as likely to be the recipients of violence in a space like that. However, I'd say women are almost infinitely more scared. Women would prefer to be on that station with a polar bear than a man. Just to bring up the man versus bear argument that folks may or may not be familiar with. And I think a huge amount of that comes down to what's in the media. If you're living in a world which I've sometimes used the line, we know the line with the media that if it bleeds, it leads. I think it's actually if she bleeds, she leads. So if there's a story about harm happening to a woman, it absolutely makes it to all media and it's horrific and horrible. And it creates a sense of anxiety and fear in people, which may be related to actual risks out in places like that, or it may not. And there's a whole other complicated thing around there around like, yes, but the physical risk to women is one of not just physical violence, but also rape. And so maybe just like, even if that happens less frequently, maybe that's actually a far greater fear than the other ones. Wildly confusing and interesting topic, but I really hear what you're saying about being excluded from the sense that you couldn't possibly understand the safety risk, because the safety risk is an exclusively female one. David.
I was reminded, I think it's this episode, so correct me if I'm wrong, but was about the reporting of, in this case, the current conflict in Ukraine, about statistics of women and children killed in missile strikes or whatever. But they're, by default, the number of men being left out of that reporting. Was that right? Was that this episode? Or am I... Anyway,
go on,
so as if, just made me aware of reporting in general of that nature, that how in that situation the number of men isn't included, which in these cases is generally much higher, that, there's this sort of implicit thing is like, of course, because women and children are more important. And men, they get killed because they kind of deserve it. And yes, when you start seeing now, thanks to you and your podcast, seeing these things, I'm like, oh, hang on. I've just been like everyone else. You just absorb that without comment. And now it's like, there's this constant barrage of values, gender values being put on in that way. And that's an example of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I think it's either men deserve it, or possibly because it's men that are doing the killing, then the men that are dying on some level just don't feel it, or it's not so bad. You get that in violence as well. Well, violence comes from men to men, so it's a men's issue. Something like, don't worry about it. But yeah. Carly.
Yeah, I have a question and then a comment. My question is, in this episode, you're specifically talking about like when men do behaviors that are specifically considered violent, right? Or is it just like all male behavior and then there's this attitude of, well, men are bad anyway?
Yeah, in the first episode, I was giving the example of male physical violence specifically, just as a working case example of how we're working with it at the moment versus what would happen if we looked at the causes.
I think my comment is something that stuck with me in my cross-cultural research about different gender politics. It's actually from like a head of household woman. I was talking about how the band of what men are supposed to be, like to be considered good and worthy members of society, seems exceptionally narrow. I mean, I guess we could say that about a lot of different gender expressions, but like specifically we're talking about how a man can be a good leader in this particular way, or a good soldier in this particular way, or in these narrow ways. And her response was, well, and I was saying, like, I wish there were more examples of men having a variety of skills and talents and experiences and ways they were allowed to express and be leaders. And she said, well, I think it's okay for men to be men, meaning like, and she went on to talk about like how the examples of particular kinds of aggression and leadership and violence to the point of military was like, well, that's just right. That just makes sense. And that like struck me, and I didn't quite know why at the time.
Huh, so she was saying, did she mean it's okay for men to be men in terms of narrowly defined definition of what men are allowed to be like? Or was it a way of saying, you know what, men can be whatever they are, and whatever they are, I'm going to define that as men?
It felt like when I was talking about like men having more emotional intelligence and being seen as poets and creatives, that she had a sort of a contraction or constriction around that, and sort of a negative pushback of equating like men to be men, equating with these qualities that I was hoping to expand, the qualities of leadership that were about more like aggression and military intelligence and things like this. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Gotcha. Yeah, beautiful point. Thank you for that. And yeah, gee golly gosh, it's almost like social conditioning doesn't serve anyone. Has anyone found that? Yeah, there's so much policing around what you're allowed to do as a man or a woman or as a non-binary person, etc. Okay. My feeling is to move on to the next episode, which episode 2 was all about privilege. So in the privilege episode, we explored the current model of thinking around that, for the most part, generally says that men are privileged in this world. And I wanted to expand that a little bit to say, yes, I agree with that. But what we're referring to there in particular is a category of privileges, which I've been taught to think of as structural privileges. And that they're the sort of privileges, or that's the sort of category of privileges that gives you privileged access to jobs, to careers, historically to education, to political office, to finances and wealth, to speaking in public and all that sort of stuff. And I'd also add something around like one of those privileges is just like being famous, like having the time and resources and being escalated and recognized for fame, whether it's through science or performance or any of those other things. I'd regard all of those as sort of structural privileges that favor men. I also added to that the category of what has been taught to me as psychological privileges, which includes things that happen to be actually more likely to lead to your happiness. So it includes things like how well you know yourself, your ability to read the people around you, emotional fluidity, communication skills, friends, your role in the community, your access to family. And most of those privileges are mostly more like female privileges most of the time. There's also a category in there of physical privileges, which is super interesting, but it's more of a mix of male and female privileges there, you might say. And so in that episode, we used some standard metrics for establishing advantage and disadvantage to get as close as we can to objectively assessing how the various privileges play out with men and women. And I don't know about for you, but for me, there were a lot of new numbers in there, new data sets, and some pretty wild ones that I was not expecting. I think that recognizing that wider range of privileges. So when we talk about this society is privileged towards men, when we look at when we recognize a wider variety of privileges, I think it's actually going to get us a long way towards solving the gender problems most of us would like to see solved. And I think it's the idea of this two-way flow of privileges that might actually be the missing link from the current gender movements. So as I move towards what the outcomes might be, instead of saying something like, this is a world that's privileged in favor of men, and we need to start sharing those privileges with women, I think we need to move to a model which says, this world privileges men and women in different ways, and we need to start giving women more access to what has traditionally been male privileges. We need to give men better access to what traditionally have been female privileges. And I guess as a part of that, I actually think we need to start getting in the way of the statement that men are privileged, full stop, or this world is built around male privileges, full stop. And I think part of the reason why we need to do this, why it's so passionate for me in this topic, is because when we say that, it's extremely hard to then find a space where you can say, you know what,
men are really suffering in these other areas. And if we just put some attention on that, we're going to solve the problem with men. But yeah, every time we just say the world is built around male privileges, full stop, we're never going to fix the problem. Yeah, what are your thoughts on privilege?
Okay. I was driving, listening to this episode from...
Sorry to ruin the drive.
No. It was of the nine episodes, I found this one the hardest. And so all of the rest of them I've listened to in kind of one shot, start to finish. This one I think took three bites before it just kind of had a bit, and then it was like, I am done. This is just a lot to sit with. And I think probably because of the structure of the overall series, like this was very problem heavy. And then as we got later through the series, there was more kind of, what do we do about it? Kind of more of a solutions focus. But I think one of the things that I've found really interesting to, almost like a little tip that I've taken away, is when someone makes a comment or I read something that just doesn't kind of sit right, it feels like I think you did it a lot through this episode, just kind of gender flipping the statement and just going, does this, and that's like, it's so simple. And it, for me, that's been a super powerful, just little brain trick to use to then feel a bit more grounded, a bit more confident in challenging whatever the thing is that I think I disagree with, but I'm not quite sure. And I'm, yeah. So yeah. This one was hard going, is my recollection. And I can't imagine what it would have been like to record. So like that must have been quite a tough time. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, it was pretty easy to record. Like it only took 25 years to get from, gee gosh, I think I need to do this, to getting it done. So that's pretty quick. I love what you're saying about gender flipping stuff. I do that a great deal. Just in case folks are not familiar with that idea, I don't know who came up with this, but I first learned about it from the women's movement, of a great way of looking at a statement that's made. And maybe you're not quite sure whether that's on or off. Really great way to test it is just to flip the genders in it and see how it sounds. And if it doesn't ping for you in the other direction, it's probably fine. But a lot of the time you go, oh no, that sounds gross. And from there, it's really clear why the statement is gross. So yeah, I do that with almost everything all the time. And I would say, actually, it's funny you mentioned that, Dan, because I would say a lot of this material comes from the process of gender flipping something that I'm not sure of. Yeah. I was curious. There's a part of me that was curious to know a little more about like what bits of that were difficult, but I'm not, it's okay. Dan, if you want to say more about that in a minute, you're welcome to, but I don't think it's a thing.
Yeah, I think especially this episode, maybe to like reinforce what Dan said, it felt very like juicy and dense, and I'm really impressed at just like the level of research that must have gone into this. And I think there were a bunch of times that maybe there was some statistic that people weren't familiar with, and it was just like, gosh, is that really true? Is that what it is? And you say like, oh, do your own research. The information is there. I wonder, maybe I missed it, but do the different episodes have like a references list, or like, I mean, I guess part of doing your own research is doing your own research, but have you assembled kind of like links back to some of the things that you've mentioned? I mean, I think you cite like police records and different government databases and all that.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. I think if I reinterpret your question as being, should there be references with all of these episodes, then the answer to that question is yes, there absolutely should be. There's no question about that. It's an academic piece of work in some ways. And also, I think there's a lot to be said for what you're saying around seeing sources in this stuff is part of the process. But to the question of, are there references for this material? No, there's not. One of the things that happened to me in getting this out was, perhaps some of you are familiar with this concept, there's the perfect piece of work that you would like to put out, and then there's the piece of work which is possible. And as it was, as I say, I wasn't really joking when I said some of this stuff I've been working on for 25 years. And as it was, it took a year of basically being, I wouldn't say dedicated to it full time, but it was a very large piece of work. And I realized if I was going to shoot for perfect, I would just never get it out. And that wouldn't feel good to me. So I wanted to put this out in the format it's in, which I would regard as good enough, but shy of where I would like it to be, if we're being honest, in terms of audio quality, in terms of references and so forth. So it's quite possible there will be a re-release of this, and I would like to put references out. If, what do I want to offer this? I can edit it out later. If anyone has a specific thing where they're like, Rog, that was an important point and I just cannot find anything to support it, can you share with me what your reference was? Perhaps I'll be able to provide that. But yeah, thanks for that. All right, I think Layla, then David.
Yeah, I really loved this way of thinking about privilege. I've been thinking a lot lately about what makes a life good and what makes me wake up and go, yes, my life is generally good and I'm happy with the way things are going. And it would just feel so reductive to narrow that down to talking about structural privilege. That feels really, I guess, dismissive and undervaluing other aspects of life that bring meaning and joy and that overall sense of, yep, this is good.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. Yeah, I think there's it's a bit of a function there a little bit of who's defining which privileges are important. And I think that most of this debate has come from my understanding in this. I'm so sorry that this is probably about to be wrong. My understanding is that a lot of this thinking came out of the race movement in America kind of in the 70s. And so straight away, that's going to be wrong. And that the thinking has been adopted by the women's movement from then forwards. And to those groups, most of the areas of privilege that are of interest and concern to them are those structural ones, because that's the one where white people and male people have had unfair and distinct advantages. But it's really funny, if ever you go for a frolic through the men's movement, you find that the privileges that that community is most interested in talking about are the psychological ones: community involvement, family involvement, the ability to not be at work, and the ability to know yourself and not be socially isolated. So yeah, it's very much as defined by who. The model and structure I've used there was taught to me through my studies in psychology and process-oriented psychology in particular, but the emphasis and the deep digging into how that plays out differently for different genders, I think that's like more my twist on things. But yeah, I also find it relieving. So thank you. David?
Yes, this episode opened a can of worms for me. And it's still, I think I'm and still working through it. One of the things I think that when you gave a list of all the privileges like that you saw people could have, I thought at the time, one of the things that you missed out on was actually the privilege of having good parents. And in my case, they thought education was very important. They had the 4 kids. And they sent them through private school. And to do that, they scrimped and saved. They spent very little on themselves. We ate frugally. I didn't have stuff that lots of other kids had. I remember at times actually being a bit hungry and wearing secondhand school clothes from someone that was a few years older than me. And then when I mention, I went to a private school and someone doesn't or hasn't, there's this sort of stigma, you had that privilege because you were well off. And it's like, no, you don't actually understand that that is not the case. That privilege came from someone else's sacrifice.
Yeah.
And so there's a tendency to sort of see privilege as like a thing without a context. And that's what I feel happens in that situation, is people don't understand the context. They just see, I've had a privilege. And it's a put down. It's, well, private school and blah, blah, blah. Whereas really what we should be looking at is not putting people down because they have that privilege, because I didn't choose my parents, so I've had this privilege through no choice of mine, but it's great. I think the world is a better place because of me having a private education, because I've got more skills, I know more stuff. The focus should really be on bringing other people up, not putting the people with perceived privilege down or being resentful about that.
I love it. Thank you for speaking. I have a couple of thoughts on it. And then, by the way, I'm thinking I'll put us into our smaller groups of three and then into a break. So we've got a break coming up in about 10 or 15 minutes is my point. I love what you're saying there, David. I'll start with the end first. Yeah, I really love what you're saying about oftentimes in the privilege wars, we focus on those that have privilege and we want to cut them down. There's something fundamentally wrong about them having privilege or whatever else. And I like the egalitarian spirit that's behind that, the spirit of fairness. But I really agree with you that the process of trying to bring people down and make people feel bad for their privilege doesn't actually really help, and it also doesn't make the privilege gap go away. I really agree with you that it should be a question of how we share the privileges we have with other people. And also, as a little adjunct to that, thank the gods that that's one of the things that brings us the most happiness in this world. So as a species, one of the things that's got us through from being something like chimps throughout the millennia to the point where we find ourselves now is we get a dopamine reward when we share and when we help out other people. So when someone falls over and we pick them up, our species is more likely to survive a little bit. And a little side mechanism of that is that when we have something like a privilege or knowledge or a tool or something like that, and we're able to share it with someone else, good for them, and we get a little dopamine hit, which is far better than the approach of just like hoarding your privileges to yourself, putting up a whole bunch of legal structures in place to make sure no one else can ever get near them anywhere. You might get very rich that way, but you're going to get very depressed that way because you don't have a tick in the box for what am I doing to help this planet. So I love what you're saying about sharing privilege. And since I know a little bit about you, I just like to say I see you sharing that privilege that you have, and thank you. The second point I want to make, this might seem like this is a bit of a technical or academic side sprawl, side mission, just as a way of understanding this model. You mentioned that having good parents is a privilege in itself, and like I really agree with you on a basic level, but just as an interesting way of understanding this model, that is something that relates to your demographic information, which has a huge influence on which privileges you have. So what you can effectively almost do is like list down one side of the page the various privileges. And as it was taught to me, you've most got physical privileges, structural and societal privileges, and then psychological privileges. And within those broad categories, you can list a whole bunch of individual things. So within psychological, you might have capacity to form good quality, high relationships and fall in love safely and well with people. You might regard that as a specific privilege under psychological privileges. Then what you could do, because I know many of you like spreadsheets like I do, you could have coming down the rows, you could have demographic examples. So really broadly, as I was saying before, if you are male presenting, male socialized, if you are male in this world, you're probably more likely to have a cluster of those societal privileges and a little less likely to have some of those psychological ones. So obviously, female is going to be more or less an inversion. You could argue that growing up in this world with what you've called good quality parents, and whether that's one good quality parent or two good quality parents or a whole community or an extended family of parents who collectively are good, it's going to mean that you're going to ping really highly for that specific one of being able to attach and form relationships. There's going to be a lot of other stuff as well, like access to education is another one, more under structural and so forth. You're also probably likely to be physically healthy, which is a physical privilege and so forth. So this is just a fun little one. If you're born in Australia, you're more likely to have almost everything on this list. It's as an example of like a demographic thing, which influences which privileges you get. I love that stuff so much. Okay, Dan, and then we might move on.
Thanks. It was my thought sprung from what David said about kind of the privilege of birth. And it reminded me of someone that I was speaking to maybe a month ago who identifies as an anarchist. And we were having a really interesting conversation. It was a good date. about and talking around privilege and the example we were discussing around with Prince Charles of being born not through his choice into the one of the most wealthiest, influential, privileged families on planet Earth. And her point, which I thought was a fascinating one, is that with that privilege comes the responsibility. And so the conversation kind of headed in the direction of the visit to Australia when there was the kind of media stuff around would he apologize for the genocide and all of that sort of thing. And yeah, it was a really nuanced, in the same way these podcasts have, it was a really nuanced conversation. And the points were quite subtle around, or I felt they were, around we understand that Prince Charles as an individual is not responsible for these things, but the wealth, the life that he has now is built upon his heritage and ancestry, and the privilege that comes from the heritage and ancestry, the responsibility for that. And so she felt quite strongly that an apology should, if he wasn't willing to do that, if he wasn't willing to take responsibility for the ancestry and the heritage of his family, then he shouldn't have access to the privileges of his family either. And such a good conversation. I just pinged into my head when David was talking, so I thought I would share that. Probably not relevant and probably clipped out of your podcast. Thanks.
No, it's totally relevant. Thank you. It reminds me that most privileges are double-edged. They have both an attractive side and a less attractive side to them. So in this case of, say, Prince Charles, the attractive side is power, having all of those services, having an incredible voice and influence, blah, blah, blah. The drawbacks is you basically never get to live a normal life. You're never going to have normal relationships. You can't go anywhere and do anything anytime you want. You can't drop out and be a creative jazz musician who paints. And there's a whole bunch of freedoms that you don't have. So if you were to say to me, would I rather be me or Prince Charles? I'd have to go, that's a real think piece. I'm going to need some time on that. The other thing about privilege is, so Prince Charles might be a bit of an exception to this. Most privileges are, I used to think of privileges very differently between those that we are born into versus those that we earn. And I used to lend more credibility to the ones that felt like we had earned them. You should have more respect. But the reality is most privileges are a combination of the two. So if you have an education, you had to be born into a privileged environment where there's enough slack in the system for that to be an option. Your family or you needed to have enough money and education needed to be provided in the country or location where you live. At the same time, you had to work for that, like 12 years of your life just to get the HSC, then another whatever, 8 years for a basic medical degree or whatever. That's not nothing. So yeah, most privileges are a combination of the two. And when we're being critical of privileges, we often talk about them just as if they're inherited. Yeah, I'm reminded that they're often a mix. I've got no idea how Prince Charles factors into this. If anyone has his number, we could see if he's available.
There's some discussions around that, isn't it? That when people have privileges, there's often the sense that, oh, I've earned this.
Yes. In ourselves, we see the degree to which we have earned and worked for and are entitled to the privilege. And I don't necessarily mean entitled in a bad way, but we tend to feel that in ourselves. When we're looking at other people's privileges, we see the ways that that thing was given to them and put in their lap. Welcome to the human condition. On some level, we all chose to be human. That's on us. Yeah. Quick comment, Leila?
Yeah, I felt really drawn into Dan's point about the relationship between privilege and responsibility and how that might play into gendered privileges. Do people have thoughts on that?
Can you say more about that?
So if being socialized as a woman, I have a lot of emotional privilege, do I have a responsibility to move through the world and use that in a way that's good for other people? Or if being socialized as a man and having a lot of structural responsibilities, does that man have a responsibility to share that privilege?
Mm. It could be part of why we're part of this podcast, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
I love that answer. Yeah. Carly?
Yeah, just a quick response to that. I've been around the voice a lot of, the minority or underprivileged group is not responsible
for educating those in the other group about why they feel oppressed and why everyone should. Which is the point of just now, it gives us a dopamine boost to share those privileges. And I'm someone who feels, yeah, conflicted about that. In my personal life, I don't feel a lot of responsibility to do anything that is against what I feel my relatively limited capacity is to educate others. And the most fulfilling work that I have done in the world, the most fulfilling projects I participated in, are me actively educating and involving others in these pieces of me that I have both inherited and worked very hard for. That is the only thing I can imagine doing as participating in the world in a good way. So in feeling revolutionized and welcomed and deeply integrating this material and the invitations of this podcast, it's like, if you want to be a part of it getting better, then maybe there's a responsibility or at least an opting in of some kind.
Okay, beautiful. Thank you for that input, Carly. To the suggestion there around it shouldn't be the responsibility of those without privilege to educate those with the privilege, I can relate to that. However, unfortunately, we're all doomed to failure if we adopt that. Like that, I can see the justice in a perfect world. It should be the work of people with the privilege to do the work. But the reality with humans is that if we can get out of something, we will. Despite the dopamine privilege that comes from working out how to share it, the vast majority of power structures and systems in this world are created so that people with privilege don't have to look at it and don't have to question it. So I can sit here for as long as I want saying that the people that have got privilege over me should do the work. And that's going to be the end of the conversation. They're just never gonna. As right and as just as that may be, and as unfair and horrific as it is for me to say it, almost never gonna happen. The reality is that not only do I need to recognize the areas where I don't have privilege, but I also need to do the unpaid emotional labor of articulating it. And unfortunately, mostly articulating it in a nice way. Because one of the very first things that people with power will do against me is to say, well, maybe you're raising a good point, but while you're being so hysterical and so ludicrous, and while you're protesting in an illegal and violent way, I can't listen to that. So unfortunately, it behooves us to not only do all of that work, but to work out how to articulate it. Does that suck? Yes. Does it hurt? Is it pain on top of pain? Yes. But this is another really good one to gender flip. So a lot of this work has been done around women have identified that men have got a lot of structural privileges, and we've often heard this perspective of, well, they should work out how to fix it. Those fuckers should work out how to fix it, if I'm fairly quoting the literature. If I gender flip that one, and if I look at this model around where psychological privileges tend to occur, there's no way in the world I could possibly say those fuckers should work out what's going on and share it with me. I just cannot do that. It just does not feel, that also doesn't feel just or fair. I think having, doing my work to get over my pain and trauma around that topic and to be able to approach the people I'm trying to approach in a respectful way, that feels fair. And the reality is they're just not going to do it until I bring them to it, bring it to them. And that's the bit for me which has taken 25 years to go from a position of like anger and fuck you to a point of, oh no, I have complete total respect. You've got something I'd like. I feel a little jealous. Can we have a conversation about how I might be able to share in that with you? Whilst also, I've got some awesome power tools over here and some tips on getting the job you want and staying in that career, which I would love to share with you.
So at this point in time, I put people into groups of about three or four and gave them directions or guidance questions to answer, essentially revolving around the theme of what the Pan Political series was like for them, what questions they had coming out of it, what issues came up and so forth. We then came back after a break and went into more discussion, which will be the next episode coming up soon. And just a reminder, the next recording will be on Wednesday, August the 13th, 2025. Love to see you there. The link is in the show notes. I'm running a course called A Therapist's Guide to Sexuality, Taboos, and Kink with Process Work International. It's designed with therapists in mind, by which I mean any one-to-one practitioner who wants to know more about the world of sexuality so as to be able to better support your clients that are exploring that world. It'll tackle a whole bunch of juicy topics, like how to pick positively and therapeutically beneficial forms of play from ones that might be damaging or concerning. It addresses why people pursue these areas of interest in the first place, and what you can do to support them towards safe and well-paced experimentation, even if you yourself have got little or no interest in such things. The course is pitched at therapists of various descriptions, but will also be of relevance to people seeking a solid grounding in best practice exploration of their sexuality. It runs for 3 2-hour sessions by Zoom, starting on September the 9th, 2025. Links are in the show notes, and also on the Curious Creatures website. Love to see you there. How about that capitalism, huh? I want to talk with you about a weird way that capitalism is actually kind of functional. It's to do with this podcast. Firstly, I want to stress it's okay for you to just listen to this and not contribute. I say just listen because it's not nothing. By just listening to it, you're engaging with my material, you're probably having chats about it with others, and really, that's all I'm doing this for. I can tell that you are there because I can see you in the total number of downloads, and it means a lot to me. This relationship works for me. It's okay to just listen. At the same time, I know that some of you want to show a more active level of support and are in a position to do so. This is where capitalism comes into it and doesn't actually do a half bad job. I've set up a Patreon page, which, in short, is an easy way for you to contribute. And it's very meaningful to me. I used to be skeptical about paying for podcasts, but eventually I had to ask myself how it differs from paying for books, or for videos, or for workshops, or for therapy, all of which I pay for pretty consistently. And this, my friends, is my version of a book, or a workshop, or a whatever. So I feel okay about asking for a donation through Patreon, if you're in a position to do so, and this has been meaningful for you. So the link is in the show notes and also on the Curious Creatures website. If you're not in a position to contribute, please don't feel guilty about listening to this for free. I appreciate you, and I appreciate having you on this ride with me. Hey folks, I'm doing another live recording. It's very much like what you're listening to right now, so bits of content and lots of questions and answers and discussion. Obviously, you get to meet me, and also opportunities to meet other listeners and have really cool chats with them. I think it's particularly useful if you're enjoying this material and you feel a little isolated in terms of people you can connect with and chat with about it. It's going to be online, and you can participate in the event without being a part of the final recording. It is so easy for me to cut you out of the edit, and there's many opportunities for you to indicate that you don't want to be recorded. It's going to be on Wednesday, August the 13th, 2025, in the evening Melbourne time. Cheap, at around about $20. And the link is in the show notes, and also on the Curious Creatures website, which is curiouscreatures.biz, B-I-Z.